Thank you for allowing us to come, Channel 9 through me, obviously, and my camera.
Well, it's great to have Channel 9 here, and it's great to have the opportunity to get some Australian voices on Channel 9 and show you, have a chance to see firsthand some of the great stuff that's being done here in Australia. So.
Absolutely, and there certainly is. So the quick question I wanted to ask you is just to get off. I mean, what is Yao? Why have you done this, Godfather?
Well, it was very simple. I'm an adjunct professor at QUT here in Brisbane.
Okay.
And back in 2007, I was on one of my regular visits over here and did a talk and ended up in the well-known Belgian beer bar here. And about 11 o'clock at night, the developers were complaining, you know, my boss gets to go to, the big conference in the U.S. and all he does is take the trolley in San Francisco and doesn't even go to the conference. And they were whining, complaining, all we get is the vendor speak for whatever company it is, right? We get the marketing evangelist or whatever it is, but we don't get any really deep tech.
Mm.
And so since I'm involved on the PC with what was the Yao and now the go-to conferences, and including QCon and so on,
mm-hmm.
Said, well, we could probably do this, and called Trifork from GoTo, and they said, well, as long as you're happy to eat the loss, we'd be happy to support you. And we started in 2008, and I've been in Sydney and Brisbane for 2 years, and now we've been in Melbourne and Brisbane for 2 years. So it's just something we did for the developer community, and they seem to really enjoy it. So
absolutely,
when you have something that people are enjoying, you keep doing it, and when they don't, then you should do something else. So
yeah, I mean, it seems one of the things I've noticed is there's a lot of developers in Australia.
There's an incredible development talent in Australia, although that's become really quite visible to a lot of other people in the world who've been recruiting very heavily here. I think with the success of SpringSource and Atlassian, both the founders here, I think that's woken up both the VC community and the recruiting community. Very strong educational system in Australia. Bright grads, they're critical. If you see their tweets, if you don't deliver, they'll shoot you as you stand, which is good, right?
Yes.
But when they hear something good, they reinforce that too. So very, very talented development community here.
Excellent. And they seem to be, you know, one of the things I really like about this conference, and of course I liked about JAL when I first met you, and also, it's GoTo now, as you said, but it's sort of a heterogeneous affair. It's not a platform-specific type of event. Everybody's invited to the party, and there's a nice intermingling between web developers, .NET developers, Java developers. The only ones sort of missing are the C++ guys, but I did meet a couple of them, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no, and I think...
And make sure to seek them out.
And I think next year we'll probably have some C++ guys back. You know, Steve Vanosky, of course, did a lot of C++, but he's trying to not confess to that. Now he's become a born-again Erlang guy.
Totally.
The idea is we really believe in what we call a complete developer, right, in the sense that today, you know, you're going to be working across platforms. There's no business that has one single technology, language, or practices. And in general, if you raise the bar for everyone and they get together, that's the other thing. You know, technocultures in some cases are harder to cross than countries, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's easier, it's easier to have, you know, someone in Japan work with someone in the United States than it is sometimes to have a, you know, C++ programmer talk to a, you know, Java programmer or something like that.
Absolutely.
Right? So technocultures are really a problem, and they're a barrier in organizations because so much technology is an amalgam of different technologies to now. So
mm-hmm.
That's really the idea. It's a very simple idea, and we try and target it kind of between the academic level, kind of between like an Uppsala or whatever, that sort of level of conference, and typically kind of at the top end of a tech ed, so we sort of overlap, we say, at the 400 level,
yes.
With the tech ed and in terms of the conference. And that's, I think that's when you're appealing. So we're really talking to the developers that want to reinvest in themselves and companies that want to do that reinvestment. So that's really
excellent.
The target.
Well, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you could go, you know, I went and I saw a talk on Haskell by none other than, you know, the godfather of Haskell, at least one of them.
Yes.
And
Simon
Payton Jones, of course. And, of course, John Hughes is in the audience, and he's around, right?
Yes.
So then you can go see a talk on, like, Ola Beeny's talk on Java as a legacy language, and the JVM is what matters, and it's being redesigned to support multiple languages, to going and seeing an Erlang talk with the React Core with Stephen, as you mentioned. So it's just it's an educational buffet in some sense. And so the question I would ask you is, I saw your talk today too, by the way, about the sort of the legacy, and also use the right tool for the job was the key message that I was hearing you talk about. Sometimes, though, I wonder if that's really advice that's followed. People always try to do a job in the language that they're comfortable in and try to use the tool to its extreme. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think language is like natural languages in many cases, in the sense you make an investment and you've learned the editor, the IDE, you've learned the libraries and so on, and that's a big investment. Mm-hmm. So I think it's only natural that people will want to go that way. I think one of the reasons we do this is that if people are sort of educated and responsible in a proper way, switching languages is not as difficult as it is. But the typical problem has been people sort of kind of siloed by the platforms and the vendors, which is a perfectly understandable vendor strategy. Mm-hmm. But as I said, organizations feel more and more pressure to use multiple technologies.
So. Understood. And specifically, I'm curious what your take is on. So, Alan Worth Brock was here, another titan. I mean, all of your speakers were of keynote quality, and that's what Stephen said in the interview that I did with him.
Thank you.
And he also tweeted that.
Well, we're fortunate to have an independent PC, so
it's amazing.
Bothers the sponsors sometimes because the sponsors like to, put their man forward, but the PC is independent. And I think that's appreciated by the audience.
Oh, absolutely. So Alan was talking about, the web browser is a transitional technology to get us to a world where everybody's writing HTML5 and JavaScript applications on the client. Now, we also have talks about Node.js, for example. And, of course, one of the Dart engineers or implementers,
Casper
Lund, is here. Couldn't get him to come on Channel 9. He was too shy.
Yeah, he's shy, but very talented developer.
Super talented. So we go from we go JavaScript on the client, on the server. What's your take on this whatever it is that's going on? Like, what is going on here? There's definitely some sort of revolution, but or evolution. What's your take on it?
Well, I think essentially the web has become. I think Alan characterized it pretty accurately. The web has become essentially a platform, and essentially if you delete the parts around the browser and look at the component pieces, as you see in his slides, I mean, the names are slightly different, but it looks very much like your classic sort of picture of an operating system or an app delivery stack. And I think it's sort of being positioned as kind of the open platform against the other platforms, I think that they all suffer from having a lot of complexity. But mm-hmm. I think it's pretty clear that a lot of devices, a lot of things in the client world are going to look a lot more like the web. Really depends. Those who have their own proprietary APIs provide such compelling functionality, mm-hmm. That people will want to use, Cocoa and Objective-C to develop on the iPhone because it's such a compelling device. I mean, the challenge for open platforms, closed platforms, basically the vendor can decide it and they can make you know, they can make informed decisions or they can make uninformed decisions, but they can, you know, architect the whole thing. And the challenge of an open platform is always being, can you, you know, for instance, Android or something like that, there's so many of them, can you, you know, deal with the fragmentation that comes up? Because it seems that, the kind of vendor, single vendor controlled platform, because you can control it all the way from the top, from the user experience to the bottom, that seems like a bit of a challenge. So I think, you know, this latest ice cream sandwich release for Android will be a test for that, and other people being HTML5. But, you know, the classic problem with open is it's been me too open and me too open and late. So, as much as you always like the good guys to win, quote unquote, because it's open being good, the problem is it's been hard to get the other issue is that often companies that do platforms make really good stuff at the bottom, but the user experience sucks, or else the user experience is neat, but it isn't scalable, and so on. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
Absolutely.
I think one of the things that's very interesting is, do you actually need that whole stack? I mean, what is that stuff? I mean, what is your average mobile app does? It sort of puts stuff in a collection and displays it on the screen. I mean, contacts, phone numbers, calendars, they're just simple collections. So you sort of wonder sometimes, do we really need all that big operating stuff system under there? So. You know, we've done some interesting stuff, prototypes where we just run JavaScript right against the graphics renderer and don't have all the DOM and all that stuff, and you can do quite a bit. So I think for special purpose devices, it's not clear that you need that big stack. I mean,
sure.
But it'll be interesting.
Now, I have noticed a trend here, and there seems to be this sort of undertone of small talk, sort of a small talk revolution in the sense that a lot of the speakers here come from that age. JavaScript seems to be, or like the, Alan's kind of impact on that, you kind of see that it's sort of small talkish in some sense. What's your take on that?
I'm probably somewhat biased since I did come through the small talk experience, although I came through a lot of other what people think are bizarre languages as well, which are also seeing somewhat of a resurgence in things like Clojure or some of the vector languages and so on. I think some of there are some good ideas that are coming forward that were found in Smalltalk, but I mean Smalltalk also had its own thing. So we don't want the Smalltalk museum back, right? We wanted something better than that, and I think Dart attempts to bring kind of a combination of an improvement with the flexible type system and things like that, still keeping kind of the syntax of JavaScript, which would upset most small talkers, but probably colons are something that some people have a great emotion with, and those funny curly brackets, and others don't. So I think it's good to see the impact, but I mean, things get invented in parallel universes, right? What happened in Lisp and happened in other dimensions, other languages, somehow they happened around the same time. So,
sure.
Although I am a big fan in a previous life of a small talk and continue to respect it, I think it's a, as we say, if you were born into a language, then it's the best language, right? So, whether it's C or C++, right?
Exactly.
I can believe it or not, I have friends that actually enjoy programming in C++.
So do I. Absolutely.
And so, a lot of the, and I think the biggest thing is getting people to, I sort of think the programming language is going to become a little bit like U.S. politics, where it's yes or no, right? Sure. As opposed to, that's interesting, but I really wouldn't use that. And, to try and see the other side and when one thing appropriate or not. That's kind of what we're really lobbying for is that people take a balanced perspective. And, you know, if you have something that's massively concurrent, other than Microsoft has some really interesting things in the C Sharp extensions and so on that Joe was talking about. I think scalable concurrency in Erlang is very, very impressive, and the track record of running and so on. And you know, that's certainly one of the reasons why there's some tension between the, or at least dialogue in the internet about Erlang versus the hot kid on the block, Node.js. Right? Mm-hmm. Node.js is a great technology. It's a fun technology, but it's programming explicitly with continuations and so on that can get pretty hairy over time. And I think that's the kind of mistake that many languages, Smalltalk, Haskell, Lisp, is that you use it for everything, and the Node.js is the JavaScript for everything. It's very nice, very interesting, but it only provides one kind of a concurrency model currently. And I think it'd be very interesting if someone did a JavaScript layer on top of the Erlang virtual machine. I suspect that would be a pretty, very, extremely competitive technology. So, people, all these things are exciting. It's one of the things we're trying to do is we'd like to limit the rediscovery of things. I don't know how we can get people to read about the things that happened before. It seems that every 10 to 15 years we reinvent everything we knew, but that's also good because it gets new energy, people, new ideas, and so just evolution.
That kind of brings up an interesting idea. I mean, if at an event there was sort of a historical track, such that you could have the present day technologies going on simultaneously with more of a historical viewpoint, people could sort of plot out to learn. We talk about Smalltalk all the time, and all these conferences I've gone to, the programming language, it always comes up and comes up and comes up. I think it's about time to go see a talk on why it is such a big deal and why it was so interesting and why it has had so much of an influence. And even other languages that most people don't use anymore that might have been amazing. So even at this event, Haskell,
Haskell's been really featured.
Of course. Yeah. It's been really featured, and it's actually, he was talking just not too long ago about Erlang in Haskell.
Yes.
To do, the massive concurrency and parallelism and stuff. And of course, it's just amazing watching Simon. And people will be able to watch that because he recorded the events, by the way. Everybody.
Yeah, Simon's talks, fabulous talks, right? Mm-hmm. We're very, very, very fortunate to have both John and Simon here. Great speakers. And
totally. And last night, now granted, we were drinking some beer. Alan was...
That does happen occasionally here.
The Australians like beer.
Yes, they do, but there seem to be a few other... non-Australians that seem to be out there as well. We can't report any names.
No. So Alan was talking about, Alan Merzbrock was trying to, or was talking about, the four core languages upon which there's the foundation of everything else.
Okay.
And it was, Smalltalk was one of them. I think Smalltalk was number four. Then there was Algol, which I think is,
Algol 60.
Yeah. Then there was, C, by the way. He left C out. What's your take on, without me listing it, because again, as I said, there were beers, and forgive me, my memory has escaped
me. No problem.
But the point of the story, the moral of the story is, do you agree that there is some sort of a foundational class of languages upon which everything else has been based on?
I think the... there's now a sort of popular group studying this book called Structure of Interpretation of Computer Programs by Abelson and Sussman, which was for many years the first year text at MIT. Mm. And it's really resulting from the graduate work of Guy Steele and the language scheme. And for many people... they call it the Wizard's Book now, right? So this is the character on the front. Mm. And most people who have read that book are actually different. I mean, the people who understand that material in that book, because it deals with interpretation and bindings and what computers do and your ability to control and change those. Excuse me.
No worries.
Perhaps being out late has had a penalty. Taking attacks on me, trying to keep these speakers and attendees herded.
Which you've been doing an incredible job of, by the way.
Well, thank you. But basically, I mean, you know, so, you know, simply after being aware of that work or similar work, in particular the Lambda papers, which Simon referred to, by Guy Steele and Jerry Sussman. I mean, you know, people say, well, what's the difference between Lisp and Smalltalk? And most people go, well, you know, they tell you, well, one's got parentheses. But fundamentally, the difference is that in the case of Lisp, you get the function, and then you have to use lexical scoping to find the variables or the environment that you're going to execute in. Whereas in an object language, you get the environment, which is the object, and then you basically get the message, then you have to go find the function. But once you understand something like, you know, a metacircular interpreter is, or the read-eval print loop, as it's referred to, excuse me. So the, but once you understand something like, you get the sort of fundamental, it's kind of the fundamental particles of computing. And people who have read that book are just fundamentally different, such that we would use interview questions to ask people, have you ever written an interpreter? You understand what a metacircular interpreter is, what higher order functions are. And so if you understand that level, then you can take various languages apart as they come in with their type system and so on. So I think that's where the sort of molecular building blocks are for computing.
Excellent. All right. Well, hey, this has been a tremendous event. And again, a thank you for bringing Channel 9 here.
Great to have
you. In the form
you.
Of me, especially. I mean, it's been just wonderful meeting and talking to all the speakers. And again, they're just world class.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to have Channel 9 covering the conference, and especially to get some Australian voices on the out in the airwaves, so that people have an appreciation for the amazing talent that's here in Australia. Thanks very much, Charles.
Thank you, and we'll see you soon.
Great.